tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 4th of September 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's Friday once again, it's the end of the week and you know what that means? It means we have a special guest with us today on the Daily Nationalist. We have Grandpa Dan, all the way from Texas. Grandpa, good day sir, how are you doing? How is life treating you?
It's we're alive and kicking and that's all we can ask for. It's finally trying to cool off. It just got down a little under 100 degrees to like 99 now, but we'll take it where we can get it. And as always, it's great to be here. We had a little slow start, had some problems. We're running a little bit later getting started. So Sven, I'm sorry, but you're going to need to pay me some reparations for the extra 30 minutes it took. I bill by the minutes, Sven. Reparations. I need some reparations for time spent.
It is quite unbelievable, these calls for reparations. That is what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about slavery reparations. And we have had a lot of technical problems today. It has taken half an hour to actually get this recording arranged. But now that we're here, it's time to talk about world leaders calling for reparation for slavery. In actual fact, it's the United Nations that are calling for that. And our source material comes from Breitbart. The headline is, UN demands immediate slavery reparations for people of African descent. And before we get into it, I mean, people of African descent, wasn't it people of African descent that actually enslaved them in the first place and then sold them? Why do they never go back to the people of African descent for these reparations? They're the ones that actually made the money out of all of this, because they essentially they got hold of a free resource. They would just go to the next village, they would kidnap the next village, and then they would sell them for goods, essentially. So they were the ones that got something for free. The white man in America, in actual fact, it was the Jews mainly in their ships. They went over and they purchased these slaves for money, brought them back to America, and the Americans had to pay for this product once again. And then the British people paid for the product once again to buy the slaves back from the slave owners in America. And none of these people got something for nothing apart from the black Africans in the first place. They all got something for nothing. And yet nobody ever seems to include them in these calls for reparations. I mean, we haven't started the article yet, Grandpa, but I mean, what are your thoughts on all of this? I know it's a subject that I think needs to be talked about more, really, the ridiculousness of it all. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think even before we dive into the article, we need to have our correct context. Our source here is Breitbart. So this is your stereotypical normie conservative rage bait source and article, and that's one of the purposes that these sorts of articles serve. This is kind of the purpose they serve. And also, you know, these sort of topics, this reparations for slavery specifically, we'll say that for any leftists that are looking at this, this is the leftist version of Trump draining the swamp. You know, when they come out with these sort of things, this is like, you know, MAGA and drain the swamp and we're going to lock up Hillary Clinton. Of course, none of those things actually happen. And for leftists, this, you know, it's just bait. It's just chum thrown out for conservatives. These reparation conversations are chum thrown out for liberal, for Democrat voters, for liberal or leftist voters. It's not actually going to happen. And as we go through the story, I'll get into why I don't seriously think that's going to happen. This is just bait, basically. It's just bait. you know, any person, liberal or black person or whatever, that sees an article like this and thinks we're one step closer to being paid money for reparations for slavery. No, you're not. No, you're not. This is, again, this is the liberal leftist version of drain the swamp, release the Epstein files, and no more foreign wars that the conservatives got with Trump. You're going to get the same thing as you go along. You're going to get the same outcomes as always. They'll throw you some bait like this and talk about this sort of thing, but it's never actually going to happen.
You know, by any metric you care to use, black Africans are now better off than they were when they were in Africa. At the time when they were enslaved, they were part of the Congo slave trade, and it was absolutely horrific. And they were tortured, and they were used as human sacrifices. They were eaten. They were treated really badly. And I can imagine white people seeing that and saying, this is just dreadful. Can't we help some of these people? And then arranging to purchase some of them and then taking them back to America and allowing them to live out their lives on a farm, picking fruit. I mean, you compare that to the life in Africa as a slave. I mean, it was quite a luxury that they were actually be given being taken to America and being looked after by white people instead of being looked after by these slave traders. And if you look at Africa today, you look at the state of it, you look at the state of the colonial parts of Africa, which were built up by the British, built up by the French. All the infrastructure was put there, power stations, roads, railways, everything that the West has. And they've essentially just let it collapse in on itself and rot, basically, where they haven't maintained any of it. And the people living there today are still the victims of slavery, particularly in Libya. And if you care that, if you compare that to the black Africans that are in America today, that know, some of them know how to read and write, they've been taught, they've been part of the same education system as white people, they have housing provided for them, they have food provided for them, they have welfare provided for them, healthcare, all of these things, they have access to the white man's civilization. And yet, for some reason, the UN thinks that they deserve to have some kind of reparations. And as I said at the beginning there, if there are any reparations due, then it would be from other black Africans. It wouldn't actually be due from white people who ended up paying through the nose for these products, essentially. But let's have a look at what the article has to say here. A UN committee warned on Monday a host of countries are legally bound to offer immediate cash settlements as reparations for the transatlantic slave trade, alongside other yet to be determined measures, including but not limited to truth commissions to address the enduring legacy of racial discrimination, it cautions, still envelops the world to this day. And the beneficiaries, of course, will be people of African descent. So this is the UN that are actually saying this, and they're not saying, oh, they need to be helped out in some way. They're saying it needs to be immediate cash settlements. There needs to be immediate cash payments to black people. And black people, on the whole, generally seem to believe all of this, and they seem to think that they are owed millions and millions of dollars, and they are owed whatever it will take financially in order to raise them up to the same standard as white people's standard of living in America. And the reason why there is a different standard of living is because white people do things differently. It's white people's civilization. They are the ones that built it. So, of course, it serves white people. It reflects white people. It's not something that black people built. So, naturally, they're not going to do as well in it as white people. And that's before you get to things such as average IQ, where they have a much lower average IQ. So, therefore, they're not likely to get these jobs that are paying lots of money. But that doesn't matter in America because you just get paid welfare. I mean, when these slaves were freed, the biggest concern was they're going to starve. They don't know how to look after themselves. They don't know how to do the things that white people do. How are they going to survive in our civilization if they haven't got somebody looking after them? And it was a genuine concern at the time that they were literally going to die out. They were going to starve to death because they didn't know how to farm. They didn't know how to do these things for themselves. And their owners, the farmers, they gave them farmland, they gave them farm equipment. They did everything they could to actually help them because they were concerned that they were going to starve. And instead of starving, effectively, America came out with welfare schemes. So they still ended up paying for them, giving them a roof over their heads, paying for their food, paying for the healthcare. But instead of doing work in kind to pay for that, they just have this this grudge against Americans. And I can see you're champing at the bit there to say something, Grandpa. What did you want to say to that?
I mean, you just have to relish these terms. Truth commissions. That doesn't sound communistic at all. Truth commissions. Only, of course, we know it would be the opposite of truth. So again, this is irrelevant. We need to keep it in that context. The United Nations is irrelevant. The only thing relevant that comes from the United Nations, let me put it this way, if it doesn't come from the Security Council, it's irrelevant. The only relevant things that come from the UN comes from the Security Council. I mean, you know, the UN can pass whatever resolution, have whatever committee meetings, have whatever findings they want to, but it doesn't mean anything. This is bait. Like you said earlier, there are black people that see this and think, oh, they're going to get money. It's not going to happen. You know, this is it's kind of like the International Criminal Court. They've had an arrest warrant out for Benjamin Netanyahu for how long now? But he's still just whatever. You know, nothing actually comes. It's just show stuff. So speaking of that, didn't Netanyahu recently come to New York, and didn't the liberal leftist, practically a communist mayor, all the hysteria around Mamdani there that was a elected mayor in New York, didn't he, wasn't he supposedly going to arrest Netanyahu and send him to the International Criminal Court? Everybody got excited about that. And what happened? Nothing. That's why nothing happened. You know, this is all, you know, they put this stuff out. Breitbart reports on it, so conservatives get all worked up and they say, oh my gosh, they're going to try to make everybody pay reparations. And then leftists or black people who lean left look at this and go, yeah, we're going to get the money. And no, all of this is just, it's like watching a fictional TV show, and you have to keep it in that context. Just to put an emphasis on this, just put this down on practical matters. If they actually tried to implement this, the UN, this commission from the UN that came up with this, has no authority to implement it. It's not going to happen. This is just political masturbation, if you would. It's pointless. But let's just say, let's just wake up tomorrow and say they're going to do this. Let's bear down on it. Money has to come from somewhere. So literally, who is going to pay for it? Let's see. Oh, well, maybe the U.S. government. Maybe the U.S. government will pay for it. Why, here's an idea. They could take all of the money they send to Israel and pay it to black people. Anybody think that is remotely possibly going to happen? Of course not. It's laughably stupid. Okay, well, the government might take the money from somewhere else. They don't have it. The bond market is right there on that precipice of falling over the edge to where the government is not even going to be able to pay the interest on the debt they already have. They are not going to go into massive debt to pay black people a bunch of money. This is not going to happen. So are they going to go directly to white people in the country? How are you going to enforce that? How are you going to say, oh, well, this white person, you know, they owe money? You can't say every white person, because what if it's a white person that immigrated here in 1952? They'd had nothing to do with it. You see, it's on a practical level, it's absolutely unworkable. You know, okay, what black people are going to receive the reparations? Because if this black person, their ancestors came to America in 1965, they're obviously not going to qualify. How would you even work that out? You couldn't. And it's just simply not going to happen. But you do love the people that come up with this. They're obvious communists, you know, because, you know, truth commissions, if there was ever a communistic sounding term, truth commissions is for sure one of them.
Well, when you think about it, if you have a look at what their actual demands are, I mean, they say the reason for this, the reason why they're owed this is the legacy of slavery. Essentially, they say the legacy of slavery is that black people don't do so well as white people, and it's because they were enslaved. But if you look at the white people that were sent to Australia, they were sent there as prisoners. They were with a ball and chain. They were effectively prisoners. Now, slaves are better off than prisoners, because slaves are not being punished. Somebody paid for that slave, It's their property, and they're going to look after their property because it costs them a lot of money. Whereas prisoners, nobody wants to look after prisoners. They're criminals, and they're being sent to Australia as a punishment. And yet, what did the white people do, these prisoners that were sent to Australia? Well, they built Australia. They built this civilization there, and they broke away, essentially, from the country that sent them there. Now, what was there that was stopping black people doing this? If it was slavery is the reason why black people don't do so well as white people, then how come when white people are in exactly the same situation, in arguably a far worse situation, when they're actually prisoners and classed as criminals, why is it that they still manage to succeed? I mean, all this is about really is about creating division, and it's about causing black people to resent white people and think that they would have everything that white people have if it wasn't for white people being mean to them. And the truth of it is the opposite. White people are very good to black people. We're very charitable people. And it's the fact that we're good to other people is the reason why we even have these truth commissions, because it will be white people that are doing this. It's not black people that got together to do this. It's white people and Jews that got together to encourage black people to do this. And of course, all the leaders of the civil rights organizations over the last century, they all just happened to be Jewish, because it was useful for them to have these civil rights problems in order to divide society, to weaken their competitors, effectively. Getting back to the article here, Reuters reports the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination stated the obligations arise from a legally binding 1965 convention on racial discrimination, not from the legal standards that existed when the slave trade took place. Well, so it's not actually anything to do with slavery at all, you see. It's this elimination of racial discrimination, because they claim that this racial discrimination that causes these disparities in life outcomes go back to racism and go back to slavery. And that's essentially the origin of racism, is what they're saying. But if they're saying this is a legally binding 1965 convention and the legal standards from then need to apply, well, slavery took place 200 years before that, 150 years before that, and you can't retroactively apply laws. So you would imagine that the UN would be well aware of that. I mean, that is a maxim of law, that you cannot retroactively apply laws. So for them to be saying that this is legally binding, this convention, how can you make a convention in 1965, which is legally binding going back before 1965? Well, you can't, but they seem to think that they can here. The committee described the approach as a paradigm shift to end debate and force action away from the arguments over historical responsibility that have been used to forestall reparations claims. So I don't think there have been any arguments about historical responsibility. I'm making the argument here that the people responsible for it were actually black Africans, not white people. It was black Africans that kidnapped other black Africans and then sold them. It wasn't white people that did that. The historical responsibility is black people, but you'll never hear that on the mainstream media. You'll never hear about that at all. I guess what they mean here, this historical responsibility, is who's actually going to pay the money, which is, of course, is what you were asking, Grandpa. Any thoughts on this, the elimination of racial discrimination, which is what this is supposed to be, why it's connected to slavery at all?
Well, something interesting, and I was looking at it as you were reading, but I was totally listening to you, by the way. I wasn't tuning you out. But looking at this article, when you go down here and you kind of, because I always like to look for some of the more fine print here. And it looks to me, from what I'm seeing, they have a little infographic up here. And, you know, we're talking about reparations. And when people hear reparations, and even in our conversation, we tend to put it in this context, like individual black people are going to get paid money. And here they're talking about racial discrimination. But when we scroll down in the article itself a little bit, there's a little infographic here. And it looks to me like African countries are demanding that they receive the money, not individual black people that live in the West. It looks to me like, because it says here, African countries' demands for slavery reparations grows louder. And it looks to me like they're saying that the country, the governments in Africa, should get this money. This is just, you know, another another money grab. They're hoping, and the little infographic shows where they have, some of these countries have successfully at different points gotten some money out of like France or Germany. And I think that's where you get to the nitty gritty as far as if any actual money is going to change hands. You know, it's not going to be going to some individual black person living in the U.S. or wherever. But these are actual countries in Africa that are demanding that they get some of that money, which I think kind of sheds a little light. But again, this, they have no authority. This commission is not, like I said before, nothing in the UN means anything unless it's out of the Security Council. That's the one place in the UN where something passes, it actually means something. All of these other commissions, and when they have the General Assembly and the General Assembly votes, that doesn't mean anything. The Security Council is the only place. So these little committees and stuff, they can make demands or claims all they want to. But you can rest assured nothing is actually going to come of it.
Well, it's interesting that it's entire countries that are demanding this, countries in Africa. I mean, who is to blame here? Is it the person selling the slaves, or is it the person purchasing the slaves? I would argue that white people essentially took these people off their hands, and they literally paid for them, and they gave them what was essentially a cushy life, picking fruit, if you compare it to the life they had in the Congo slave trade, which I say was absolutely horrific. They were tortured, murdered, butchered, eaten, just horrific things were done to them if you read about the Congo slave trade. And you can see white people going over there and being horrified at this and saying, well, how can we help these people? Well, we could purchase some of them and we could take them to America. And Stephen Livingstone, Dr. Livingstone, he's one of the most famous anti-slavery campaigners. He was absolutely horrified at the Congolese slave trade and what went on there. And he said, well, the way to deal with this is we need to build infrastructure in Africa. We need to build ports. We need to build railways. And we need to help the Africans to learn how to make some other product other than other Africans that they can then sell on the world market. And if we have ports there and railways, transport, then they would be able to transport their goods to the coast and we'd be able to purchase it from them and they could take part in trade. And essentially the only way that we can do that is if we colonize the place. So the whole idea of colonizing Africa was to help them to give up slavery, essentially. And that was our reason for colonizing them. And yet we're told, oh, colonization was terrible. We need to be anti-colonization. It was colonialism that gave rise to slavery in the first place. So the truth is, it's the complete opposite of that. And what happened when we did get rid of slavery is these African countries continued to kidnap other black Africans and use them as slaves. And his famous Chinese Gordon, another anti-slavery man from the British Empire, no less. And he also worked for the Turks. And he also worked for the Chinese. And he was in Sudan. And he would rescue these Sudanese slaves from being tortured by these other black Africans. And then the problem was he would free them in Sudan. And then 6 months later, he would catch them again. And they'd been caught again by these other black Africans. They just did not want to give up slavery because that was the main product that they had. Whereas people in the West, we thought, well, this slavery business, we're not too happy about this. It's not right that one man should own another man. So we'll get rid of this. And the Africans didn't want that to happen. And there was wars that were fought over it. Lots of men died in the British Navy. And yet today, it's not the white man that is being praised for getting rid of this. It's the white man that's being told he needs to pay compensation to the black people for getting rid of slavery. Well, the UN document, which reportedly may be cited in courtrooms, says states' parties must implement comprehensive reparatory measures for people of African descent, covering all aspects of remedies. So they're saying it may be cited in courtrooms, but I think, as you say there, Grandpa, whether anybody will take any notice of that in courtrooms is another matter. But as we have such a demographic problem that we have at the moment, and as black people seem to be increasing at an exponential rate, I mean, there could come a time when the courtrooms have a majority of black people in them. And when that time comes, they may very well refer to this and say, well, we've got to pay these reparations. But I should imagine by that time, civilization might well be collapsing down behind our ears. Any thoughts on that, Grandpa?
Well, I had to chuckle because you were talking about colonialism and building ports, and the answer is, you know, go in and build ports, and that way they can move their product to the coast and export them. And I was thinking about, you know, the immigration issues into Europe, and I thought they're still exporting their products at the coast. It's still, even to this day, it's happening. You would wind up at we're a lot closer to, you know, quote unquote civilizational collapse. I don't think it's nearly what people imagine that looks like. Then a lot of people want to think about, as long as, and in that situation, nobody's going to be talking about free money for black people. There's not going to be any money for anybody. But as long as the current power structure, talking about going into courts, may be cited in courts, except that this commission doesn't have what courts? This commission doesn't have any actual authority. They don't have any authority in the U.S. They don't have any actual authority. As long as the current power structure that exists, it doesn't matter. You know, they can appoint as many black judges and juries as they want to, because the power structure itself. In other words, the power structure, for instance, in the U.S., but this applies to the West in general, it's very centered primarily around Jews. And so they're not going to give that power up. You know, that's not, you know, in other words, you could get a black judge and a black jury, I suppose, to make a ruling that, oh, well, all of this money needs to be that the government doesn't have. It needs to be played to black people. That's just going to go to a higher court. And the power structure that exists today, is that going to be in their benefit? And I don't really see that. I don't see that as being in their benefit. So they're just going to say, no, that's not going to happen. That is one of the fail safes that the courts provide, to make sure that whatever, quote unquote, the people want, if that is not something that the power structure wants, then it isn't going to happen. You know, a good example of this is, years ago, you know, we think here in America, you know, California, there's a big liberal state, you know, but they love their liberalism. And, you know, not many years ago, though now it's been, I guess, a couple of decades, California passed a proposition outlawing gay marriage. California. And it was already a quote unquote liberal state, but they have a deal in California. You can put up these state propositions and the people can vote on them. And they had a proposition outlawing gay marriage, and it overwhelmingly passed in the state of California. Well, the courts came in and said, no, that's not legal. That's unconstitutional. Of course, there was no constitutional precedent for that. They just made it up. What it comes down to is the power structure did not want that. So it doesn't matter what you vote for. They just come in and the courts act as like a fail-safe valve to say, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. I don't see anything about taking money that, again, the government doesn't have, but the Jews aren't going to give up their money for this either. So I don't see the power structure ever coming in and say, yes, we're going to do this. We're going to make everybody pay reparations. No, you know, again, as long as the structure itself exists, you're going to have a higher court come in and overturn that and say, yeah, that's not happening. This UN commission doesn't have any authority. And really, the weasel words they use here kind of is a tale that they know they don't have any authority. It says it may be cited in courtrooms. Well, you can cite anything you want in a courtroom. You know, I could go in a courtroom and cite Mein Kampf. It doesn't mean it's going to mean anything. You know, you can cite whatever you want in a courtroom. It doesn't mean it's going to have any sway. This is, it's just, again, it's not going to happen. This is just bait to get everybody worked up. And don't get me wrong, it's an interesting, and we're having a fun intellectual conversation about it. And, you know, points I think you're bringing up are very relevant. You know, you could go to going back to what I was saying, who would you actually make pay? And okay, well, if you're going to say that, then you have to say, well, what have we already paid as a society? Well, because, you know, between welfare payments, what we've paid in property loss from obviously statistically proven criminal activity, you know, when you tallied those books, they may actually owe us reparations, you know. So, yeah, nobody wants to go down that road. So it's not going to go down. So they just come out with things like this so they can throw it out there and people can say, oh, look, look, we're getting closer to reparations. Trust me, you're not getting closer to any sort of reparations.
Well, you mentioned there that you don't think the power structure would ever put up with this. But in South Africa, there is already something like this happening where you have a black majority and the ANC, they voted that they would just take the farms from the white people, just expropriate them as compensation for racism, I guess, and South Africa. And the courts backed them on that because they were a majority black. So it's already happening in South Africa that they're taking what white people have so that they could just hand it over to black people. And eventually there will just be such a large number of them that, that by sheer weight of numbers, they will be able to force these sort of things through, which is what they have done in South Africa. So I'm not so certain that the power structure would not go along with this, because the power structure is going along with it in South Africa. Well, according
before you jump in, let me. There's a difference though between South Africa and say the United States. The United States, if we're being obvious, the United States is a vassal state of Israel. So you have to weigh that on South Africa. That's a smaller country. It's really an apples to oranges comparison. Since the U.S. is a vassal state of Israel, as far as the government is concerned, so you have to weigh it in that mindset. Is this good for the Jews? Because that's how they decide these things. And again, I taking limited funds, with the crumbling empire, and saying we're going to take money that we don't have. And again, it's their money. And distribute it to black people. I just don't see that, as being good for the Jews. That's why I say the power structure, I don't see it doing it. South Africa is kind of a little, an apples to oranges comparison, I think, in my own defense there, Sven. But go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Well, South Africa is different to America. You've got different demographics there. But I do think the weight of numbers might eventually be able to sway things, although you could say that Jews have always been a minority and yet they've managed to accumulate great power over the years. Perhaps they would still stay in power even if you had a massive majority of black Africans. And if you look at it like that, then it seems that you might be correct there, Grandpa, looking at what's happened there with history. According to UN estimates, some 12.5 million Africans were taken and sold between the 15th and 19th centuries in what the committee called the largest forced displacement in history. What about the white people that were part of the Arab slave trade, the white gold, when the slave traders from Tunisia and Morocco, and they made their way to Europe and they took white people. They literally just went up on the beaches and stole white people. And yet you never hear about that. And I'm sure that must have been millions. I should imagine that this is an amplified number. And I would also wonder how many Africans were actually taken and sold in the centuries before that. Probably millions more. A total of 182 countries have been targeted as due to pay, including the United States, United Kingdom, France, Portugal, and others that were heavily involved in the transatlantic slave trade, which from the 16th to the 19th century saw millions of African men, women and children shipped to the Americas. Yes, but when they were shipped to the Americas, this is another fact that doesn't very often get brought up. When the white people took African slaves, they purchased wives for them because they didn't think that it was right that they should be without a wife. When the Arabs took the African slaves, they castrated them because they didn't want them to breed with the Arabs, essentially. Whereas the opposite of that is when the white man, a charitable white man, took the African slaves, he said, well, we should also purchase a wife for him. So you can just see the difference there between either castrating them or actually purchasing a wife for them. And I noticed that Saudi Arabia, a country which still arguably has slaves today, whether that's legal slaves, which are non-citizens, working for peanuts, or whether that's the illegal kind, of which there is still quite a lot of it going on in Saudi Arabia, that you certainly don't see them as being due to pay. Instead, you just see these white countries, who essentially are an easy touch, I think. Grandpa, do you want to say anything to that?
Well, we ought to also bear in mind that slavery continues to exist, not literally in the sense. One of the tricks they did is they convinced people that are essentially slaves that they're free. You know, when you're working for wages, when you're employed, you're essentially a servant. And this is another way of saying, so yeah, you have the freedom to quit your master, but what are you going to do? You're going to go sign up for another master, and you're selling your time. And we've talked about it before, and you've done a lot of stuff. I mean, back in the day with your, a lot of your historical podcasts talking about slavery, you know, about, you know, when you factor in, and to be clear before we go on, nobody here, you or I know I speak for you on this. We're not saying slavery is great. I think slavery is a horrible thing. I think it's a bad idea. I think colonization is one of the white man's worst mistakes ever when you look at the end results. But when you factor in, you know, just on a practical matter, let's say a slave has provided housing, he's provided health care, food, you know, his daily necessities. You know, and you look at people today that are working, that have jobs, healthcare, you're on your own, buddy. You know, if you live in check to check and you don't have the money to pay all your bills, tough. It's your problem. You know, your kids get sick or you get sick and you don't have any way to afford. You've got to go to the hospital or something. Tough. See, back in those days, at least slaves, it was the owner's problem. It was business owner's problem. He had to figure out how to get that person taken care of, how to get that person seen about. So when you think about it, the only thing that's changed on a practical matter from slavery is you have the ability to change masters. You can quit your job and go to work for another master. But at the end of the day, you're still a slave. When you're on the clock, you got to do what they say you're going to do. A lot of companies, you know, they have these agreements that you have to sign that even when you're in your off time, you know, you got to conduct yourself in a certain manner. You can be held responsible for things that you do even when you're not on the clock. Some companies require you to be on call and they still don't pay you, but you may be off, but you got to keep your phone so they can contact you and demand that you come in. You're a slave. Yeah, it's wage slavery, but it's still slavery. It's the same thing. They've just convinced everybody that they're free now. It was actually really a very clever ploy. And just one little quick reference, you know, going back to the South Africa thing, you know, when you look at South Africa, that's you're talking about, you know, we were saying earlier, civilizational collapse. I think it's quite arguable that this is what South Africa is, what civilizational collapse actually looks like. It's not literally some, you know, some fictional show you imagine off of TV. But if you look at South Africa, I think it's arguable that that is what, you know, now you're in the actual societal collapse stage when you start thinking about South Africa.
Well, when you talk about wage slavery there, one of the big differences, and it's not really that much of a difference, is that there's more choice, isn't there? If you were a slave, you had to wear what your master gave you. You had to live where your master told you to live, and you could grow the food that the master gave you in the patch of land that they were given as well, because they were given land as well as housing. Whereas today we have this choice, and we can go out and buy whatever type of clothing we want. We can rent wherever we want to rent, work out what we can afford. So you have a choice. That's essentially the only difference, is that there is a choice. And of course, there are drawbacks. As you pointed out, Grandpa, if your child got sick, your slave owner would have to get the doctor. And the slave owner would pay for the creche as well, and for the education, and for when the slave was sick. And they'd have a house over their head even when they were retired. They were looked after in retirement. Whereas an employer today doesn't do any of those things. So there is pros and cons to everything. I'm not saying slavery is a good thing, but we certainly have a false impression of it today when we look at it. And one of the ways that you can tell that, during the time of Elizabeth I, there were black people in Britain, and there were starving people in Britain at the time, and people who weren't employed. And they complained to Queen Elizabeth I and said that these blackamoors that were being used as slaves, they were better off. And why won't they enslave the white English people that were there? Because they're starving. You know, they would give their eye teeth to be somebody's slave. And that shows you that being a slave actually had a higher status than being just unemployed, whatever the word was back then for a vagrant, I guess, or a vagabond, a vandal. It's not a vandal. There's some word I'm trying to think of that they used to actually use that just meant somebody from a village. But it was essentially what the unemployed were. And if you were a slave, you had a higher status. And incidentally, Queen Elizabeth I then ordered these slaves to be taken to Portugal and to go back to where they came from, essentially. And that's one of the only records we actually have of there being any black community in Britain. And that was only about 600 or 700 people. But the important thing to take away from that is that they had a higher status than normal white people who weren't actually employed, because it was the system of employment. If you were a slave, you were employed effectively. You had a job. So you were better off than the unemployed are today, because you had all this stuff provided for you. So the status difference was rather similar to as if you were unemployed today and then you're comparing somebody that is unemployed to somebody that is working. Or calls for reparations, ranging from official apologies to financial compensation, have gained momentum internationally, although opponents argue people today should not be held accountable for crimes allegedly committed by their ancestors. The European Union and Britain abstained from a UN resolution on slavery in March. And this is interesting because they're claiming that it was a crime. How can it be a crime if it was legal at the time? This is, goes back to this applying the law retroactively. And when Christians actually held slaves, they held them lawfully and they held them in accordance with biblical law on slaves. You know, there's a lot of stuff in the New Testament about treating slaves well, about slaves should love their masters and masters should not mistreat their slaves. And these were God-fearing men, these farmers, basically, that had these slaves, and they lawfully held them and they kept the laws. Just the same as we have the institution of marriage today, and you might get the odd wife beater, badly behaved husband. Back then, you often had slave owners, and you might get the odd, badly behaved slave owner who might abuse his slaves. But that was the exception to the norm, and they would have been ostracized by society because they would have been going against Christian law. So to say here that people should not be held accountable for crimes allegedly committed by their ancestors, I mean, even saying that is propaganda, because it's inferring that they were actually doing something criminal by purchasing slaves and by using slavery as the system for employment. And it wasn't criminal at the time. And that's the whole point of it. And we might look back on it now and say, well, to do that today would be a crime. Yes. But it wasn't a crime that was being committed back then. And I think what they're most likely to get is possibly official apologies. But I don't think there should really be apologies for it, because I don't think we should be apologizing for helping these black slaves out, which is essentially what we did. If they weren't purchased by white people, I say that they could have been killed, they could have been eaten, they could have been used as a human sacrifice. It was infinitely preferable for them to get on a boat and go to America and live with an American Christian farmer than it was to be living as the tribal chief's property. When that tribal chief died, they slaughtered all the slaves for a start. That never happened in America. I don't know what they did about wives in Africa. I doubt whether they purchased wives for them in the same way that these white slave owners did when they were in America. And it certainly wasn't looked upon back then as being a crime. So really, I'm not sure that it should even be apologized for. If somebody should be apologizing for it, it should be these African chiefs that took these other Africans and sold them in the first place. It shouldn't be the people that purchased them and then gave them a better life that are having to apologize for it. I mean, just look at today. You still have people desperate to leave Africa and come to Europe for a better life. And that's essentially what was happening to these slaves. Slavery is not good. I'm not saying it's good. But to be a slave in America working on a farm was infinitely preferable to being a slave and owned by a tribal chief in the Congo. Grandpa, do you want to speak to that at all?
I was just thinking I could get on board with reparations. I think if you said, you know, each person gets X amount of money, you know, but as a caveat, you got to go back. You got to put your money where your mouth is. So you can take the check, but then you also got to go to a designated African country that is going to be your new home. I wonder how many, that would be a money to your mouth thing when people cry, you know, demand reparations for slavery. Say, okay, well, we'll give you a check for however much amount, but you got to go back and you can't come back. You got to go back to the motherland, to the mother continent. I wonder how many people would actually jump on that. I would say virtually zero, which kind of just, you know, puts the whole lie, you know, shines the light on the lie of all of this silly, ridiculous talk about paying reparations for something that happened hundreds of years ago. Where do you stop with that? You know, well, we're going to go back 200 years. We're going to go back 400 years. We're going to go back 1,000. This land was promised to us 3,000 years ago. I mean, at some point, where do you stop? You know, at what point do you say, well, you know, We move on. The people that were involved with that are no longer alive. So we've got to move on. You know, it's not like this world, everybody in this world today, it's not like we don't have real problems. It's not like we don't have real issues. Everybody, no matter who you are on this planet, you know, we have real problems. And the people that should be in a position to be actually dealing with real problems today, they're doing stuff like this. You know, I mean, you know, there's people suffering a lot today under really horrible conditions. Where's the work being done to do something about that? Instead, you have a circle jerk conference like this talking about money, you know, talking about money for something that happened 200 years ago. That isn't going to happen. This is just theater. You know, how come none of these people are actually addressing any real problems? They don't, they can't. And so what they do is they make up a problem. They make up an imaginary problem and then put on a big show about how they're dealing with this imaginary problem with their imaginary solutions, which always at the end of the day means they themselves are going to get some money out of it. It's also tiresome.
It's also always about painting the white man to be the bad guy when the white man is the good guy. As I pointed out, the only reason they're having these commissions is because white people set them up, and the only reason that slavery was stopped is because white people stopped it. The Africans wanted to continue it. Well, the countries that abstained, that's UK, Portugal, America, what have you, their abstention is in line with other states who have argued in court that there were no international laws outlawing the slave trade at the time. The so-called intertemporality principle, and that's that you cannot retroactively apply law. Irrespective of the legal characterization of the original historical acts, states' parties remain bound by their present obligations under the convention to address structural inequalities. The UN document states, by way of caution to any states preparing to resist reparations directives, per the Reuters report. Financial compensation alone is not sufficient, it adds, urging transformative measures, including opening archives, revising public memorials, and establishing independent truth commissions. So they're effectively calling for more money. They want money to be given out individually. They want money to be given to these African countries. I don't know what sort of archives they want opening. I'm not sure that Africa actually kept any archives. Revising public memorials, I guess that means tearing down any public memorial to a white man that existed over 150 years ago, because they would all be connected to slavery in some way or form. And independent truth commissions, essentially more commissions like this. Let's have a look and see if we can find some more ways to blame the white man for everything that's happening. I mean, in a way, you could say it's right. Well, it is a white world. The white man does deserve to be criticized for the negative aspects of it. But so much of it actually goes down to the fact that there are racial differences. That's what the cause of these different outcomes in life are. The fact that the races are different. Essentially, you have different average IQs. And there's nothing more representative or more accurate in predicting life outcomes than your actual IQ quotient. And when you look at Black Africans, the most recent studies claim that they have an IQ of 85, and I think that's probably because the tests were taken at the universities. And the older studies show that the average was around about 70. Now, I've heard Dr. E. Michael Jones saying, oh, yes, but what language were these IQ tests in? Well, a lot of these IQ tests are just visual. It's solving puzzles. They don't actually use any language. And these tests are also, they tailored them to different cultures. And then they discovered that when they actually made them culturally specific, that they actually did worse on these IQ tests. So you have a different IQ. That's one of the reasons why there are differences. But it's not just IQ, it's just different ways of doing things. Black Africans have always had a different way of doing things to white people. They never built a civilization, so why would we expect them to succeed in an environment that white people built? And the final thing that I want to say is what we see today, we see Black Africans willing to risk drowning to death in order to get into Europe. They are that desperate to get away from Africa. And that's after we built up Africa and brought all the infrastructure there and did away with slavery and tried to stop them from eating one another and tried to improve the place. They're still desperate to get away from there and they will risk dying. And, you know, I do think that these Black Africans that were taken as slaves to America, they were far better off than the Black Africans that were left there in Africa. Well, what are your thoughts on all this today, Grandpa? Do you want to sum things up before we finish?
Transformative measures. What does that mean exactly? You know, they're demanding transformative measures. That there's another one of those word spells that doesn't mean anything. I mean, they threw out some pseudo examples, but it's BS. I mean, like you said, opening archives. What archives are they even talking about? Establishing independent truth. Can we come back to that? Independent. That sounds like something, you know, that Stalin would have, you know, Stalin's independent truth commissions. Everybody cringes at that because everybody knows it wouldn't have anything to do with actual truth. You know, it's just, it's transformative measures, transforming into what? And so at what point would anybody actually go along with it? Again, nothing's going to come of this. But, you know, if you actually say somebody actually tried to come in and do that, you know, okay, well, the other party gets a say so too. What if the other party says, yeah, no, we're not doing that? I think a lot of countries, I mean, at least, you know, for instance, here in the US, I think people are getting really close to, we're not going to do that. And maybe a lot closer than people that come up with these brilliant little ideas realize, you know, at some point in time, what happens if a whole bunch of people say, yeah, no, we're not going to do it. You know, what are you going to do? You know, let's see you enforce it. I don't, you know, it's impractical. And again, it's not, there's no motivation for the, you know, for the powers that be to actually, you know, go with this. This is mostly just feeding people, just people on the left that want, you know, transformative measures to think they're really going to see something like this. And it's rage bait for conservatives. You know, my gosh, look what the UN is doing now. Again, if it's not on the Security Council, it does nothing. The UN does matters. It doesn't make any difference. But again, on a practical level, if they actually tried to come in and enforce this, you know, how successful would that actually be? You know, if everybody just refuses to do it, what are you going to do? Lock everybody up in prison? You aren't going to get any money then, are you? It's just, you know, it goes back to South Africa. They took all the white people's farms, and then what? Years later, they're basically, oh my God, we're starving to death. We got to import food. You know, you just wind up cutting off your nose in order to spite your face.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be any reparations anytime soon. But the more they talk about it, the more I'm going to pick holes in it, because I do think it's a subject that needs to be talked about and it needs to have a light shined upon it. And it needs people to hear the other side of the story, because all we hear is this, how terrible white people were and how poor black people are because white people mistreated them. And that's just not the truth. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.